We're going to get started with Stump the Pastor, and the most difficult thing about Stump the Pastor is always to have the first question, and it looks like Hilder has the first question.
I've got one. With call night having been this month and with you having an interview, How did the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church decide to do calls the way they do? Because a lot of other Christian denominations don't do calls. They kind of like, it's an interview, or they move them around a lot quicker, and it's not based on a call. It's more like, okay, their synod just says, move.
Whatever the bishop says.
Yeah,
that's a really good question. So the question was, how did the Missouri Synod come up with its call process? I think you may have stumped me. I think that's something that fits into that category of, well, we've always done it this way. Now, things have changed over the years. And so I imagine that there's some of that that continues to be the case. So, like, Henry and I actually were talking about way back when interviews were not a thing. You would never interview, instead what would happen is that if a local church wanted a pastor, they wanted to call a guy not out of the seminary, but out of the field, they would get that pastor's information. Now, all of us pastors have two documents that are available currently. I think historically this has probably been the practice for quite a while as well. One of them is the PIF form, personal information form. That is kind of like a resume. It says, this is who this pastor is, this is how long they've been in ministry, these are the places that this person has been in ministry, these are the things that the person has done. So mine says, you know, I've been a part of, I was an assistant director for LCMSU, the national campus ministry thing, that I've been district secretary, those kind of things. And all of that stuff. And then you also have the SET form, which I forget what SET stands for. The SET form is basically a list of theological questions that the pastor answers that are supposed to let the congregation know, okay, this is kind of where this person is coming from theologically. Of course, always within the realm of the LCMS, but you know, within the LCMS, there's a little room for some differences in there. Those two documents then, in the old days, the congregation would get a bunch of these things, they'd look at them, they'd go, all right, the one we feel that the Holy Spirit is calling us most to is this guy. They'd send a letter, hey, you've been called. That guy then would deliberate and think about, okay, am I actually being called to West Broken Arrow, Nebraska, and then would send back a response. Either the terminology is returning the call, saying, no, I actually don't feel that I'm called here, or accepting the call and saying, okay, I'll come and be your pastor. So the interviewing, that is within at least Henry's lifetime. It's always been it's always been in my ministry, it's always been something that has happened. It still happens today. I've got friends who just get a letter out of the blue, that go, hey, we're calling you. So that still happens a lot of times, mostly in the plain states and places like that. Now the norm is, and this, again, is people called from the field. The norm is that you're contacted by the circuit. This all gets started by being contacted by the circuit visitor, who our circuit visitor is Frank Canast up in Valdosta. He says, hey, are you open to a call, meaning, and that question is there anything that is very clear to you that you could not think about a call at this point? So when I did this as in a pinch hitting kind of way for Epiphany for one of their rounds, and the responses that I got back were, hey, I just took a call here. I've only been here for a year. I can't consider another one. Yeah, my family has got medical problems right now, and we're trying to deal with that, so I can't think about one. There's one other. But so, like, you know, basically kind of like, hey, it's really apparent that I don't think that this is going to happen. So then after that, then normally most congregations will do phone interview, this series of phone interview, Skype interview, and then in-person interview. Sometimes the call will come before or after the in-person interview, depending on how they do it. Now, some places will only do an in-person interview for one candidate. Other places will do an in-person interview for like three candidates or two candidates. So that's kind of the way that it currently goes. And then, yeah, once the congregation extends a call, most of this up to the congregation extending the call is, you know, the congregation getting to know, okay, who do we want to call? And it's really not so much the pastor saying, I'm thinking about accepting or declining. It's just, I'm going to be a part of that process with you so that you have some clarity about who you're calling. Once the congregation makes a call, then at that point, then, you know, then it's the pastor's turn to start saying, all right, Holy Spirit, what's going on? Where are we going? That's the way that it currently is. The thing that stumps me and the thing that I don't know that I'll have to go and research is what this looked like back when you know, C.F.W. Walther was the first ever synod president in the late 1800s, and how that developed. That I don't know, because, you know, a lot of these things are the way that they are today, you know, because we have technology that enables those things to happen. You know, we have Skype that, you know, people can look at you while you're answering these questions. We have airplanes where, you know, people can fly all over the country. They didn't have that back in Walther's day. So I would imagine the process had to be a little bit different because of that. Since I mentioned it, the seminary process is a little different. The seminary process is much more of a, Fiddler on the Roof. What's the matchmaker lady? Yenta?
Yeah.
So seminary plays Yenta. The seminarian says, hey, this is kind of what I want to do. There are congregations that say we would be open to getting a seminarian. And then the seminary, in its infinite wisdom, says, all right, I'm going to match you folks up. Interestingly, I was the exception to that rule because this congregation called me by name. Because I was a known case here. And so it was actually kind of a little bit disconcerting for me because all of my friends were doing all of these interviews with different churches, because a lot of churches, as a part of that process, would interview, especially if they were churches that had other staff, to make sure that the staff got along. All of my friends were doing all of these interviews, and we were all doing them together until a certain point where it stopped, which was when, you know, this all came in. And I was like, what happened? Like, all of a sudden, it was like, either this is good news or bad news.
Became highly recommended, let's just say that.
Okay. Yeah, but it was like, I didn't know. I mean, up until right before call day, I still was like, oh, there's about five places I could go. So I wasn't sure. Larry?
Are those PIP and SEP documents maintained by St. Louis? And so you don't know how many people are accessing that, or do they let you know every time?
That is correct. I was having a conversation years ago now with our district president, because I had just found myself, somebody reached out and said, hey, we want to interview. And Greg said, yeah, your documents go out fairly regularly, which I was clueless about. I don't know if that's still the case. He knows that. So people at the district level, especially the district president, because the district president in this process gets to, so the way that this works, if you all were making a call, the way that it would work is this congregation would get to say, hey, we've got these five names, let's say, that we think would be people that we want to consider. And then the district president would come back and say, sometimes, well, these two guys don't fit. Like, they're not going to work, because he knows stuff going on with guys. And here's five more for you to consider. And then the call committee takes that whole lump and then starts going through them. So he knows who's on the list at any given congregation at a certain time. I have never updated my set answers. In fact, updating your set answers is a sneaky way to show that you are maybe interested in a call, because it shows, oh, this person updated their set file, which means they must be thinking about people reading their set file. I have not done anything with my set file since I got out of seminary. And I actually read it the other year because I was like, I kind of wonder. I was thinking maybe I should update that. So you're able to look at your own and download your own. And I was able to look at it and read through my answers, and I was like, I'm pretty happy with that. I'm not going to change it. Yeah?
Changing subjects. I'd like you to comment on something. It's not really a question. It's a situation to comment on. And this situation has arisen with respect to ordination of practicing homosexuals and same-sex marriage in the church.
Okay.
And discussions I've had with people in other faiths, not necessarily Lutheran. And it's this accent. You often hear this comment, well, I believe in the Gospels and unconditional love. Uh-huh. And the whole thing about sin is kind of just pushed under the carpet.
Yeah. Especially in terms of ordination?
Yeah.
So ordination, I think, is a completely different topic than, the Gospels don't really talk about ordination. Well, I mean, I guess they kind of do when you have Jesus breathing on the...
My question is about this focus on just the Gospels and love. It's almost all Gospel and no law.
Yeah, so that's akin to one of the heresies that we looked at in this past study called Marcion, who said, oh, well, you know, I'm going to pick and choose which of these things I think is good for me to read. Anytime that I go, anytime I hear somebody say, well, I only really believe in the Gospels, that's not really Christianity. As righteous and pious as that sounds, and usually things that sound really righteous and pious are reasons to question, it's not a good understanding of the church. Yeah, to say, oh, that guy Paul and Peter and James and the guy who wrote Hebrews, whoever, who that may have been, you know, they were all stick in the mud, you know, Christians. And then to then say, you know, the guys who wrote the Gospels, oh, well, they're all fine, because that's, it's just, it's intellectually, it's just not very smart. Because Paul's stuff shows up earlier than John's gospel. So you can't make that argument, really.
Well, now, wasn't it Paul who posed the question, okay, grace is great, so therefore I should sin more so I can get more of this great thing that's grace? And the answer was no.
No, right, yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, you throw out the epistles, you throw out a lot of baby with the bathwater. And I think it would be legitimately interesting to actually try to form some kind of systematic theology that only came from the Gospels. I think it would be a lot more difficult than what people assume that it would be.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of grace that you get with the epistles that you don't get with the gospel. Yeah?
This is just going back again to the call process.
Uh-huh.
There was a time in my lifetime, and I don't know whether it still exists, that Lutheran teachers were called.
Oh, yeah. They still are.
Are they still, like Jim Messick,
mm-hmm.
called?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, in the hierarchy of the LCMS, we have those who are commissioned ministers dash ordained. Those are pastor folks. And then commissioned ministers dash, ministers of the gospel dash ordained and ministers of the gospel dash commissioned. The commissioned folks are teachers, directors of Christian education, certain people with a degree that comes out of Milwaukee called lay ministry, and directors of Christian outreach. There's a few other categories. All of those people are able to be called. Unfortunately, commissioned teachers, so teachers who get a call, are becoming more and more rare to find in Lutheran schools because a lot of schools are just hiring folks, especially down here in Florida. It's really hard for us in Florida, Georgia, to keep a commissioned worker, a commissioned teacher, because most commissioned teachers, we are a denomination that tends to be Midwest-centric. So a lot of our commissioned teachers will stay down here for 2 or 3 years, and then they'll get a call back close to home. And they'll take that. So it's a difficult thing. But there are still quite a few called teachers. We're trying to figure that out in the Florida Georgia District now, how we can bring our contracted teachers up. So contracted teachers don't necessarily have to be called. How we can bring them up to understand a little bit more about our Lutheran theology and be able to be trained in that way. Yeah.
While we're on this call issue, this is related. Now, how do they deal with missionaries? How is it determined, oh, we need to set up a new mission here, or, oh, it's time to swap out missionaries, that sort of thing, at an existing mission?
Yeah, so interesting thing about missionaries in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is that they're all from Missouri. So here's how. The call comes through the Board for International Mission. So Mark Raby's a little different story, I think. Basically, Mark Raby, who is missionary in Ethiopia, our coffee money goes to him. Mark Raby is called by the Board for International Mission, which happens to be housed in our headquarters in St. Louis. So all of our missionaries, therefore, come from Missouri. They're all Mark Raby actually transferred out to be back in Florida, Georgia, and he did that for some fundraising reasons. But most of them continue to be that way. But the way that it works is that the Board for International Mission then decides, okay, we need a missionary in this country, and then they call somebody to serve as that missionary. Here in the Florida, Georgia district, we also call missionaries via the district. So I think right now we have 3 called missionaries. One is doing work in the Atlanta region with Hispanic folks. Another one is down by Naples, also with Hispanic folks. And another one is down closer to Miami, dealing with Haitian.
Are those handled differently from international missionaries?
Yes, because they're not international. They're
on the international basis. If a missionary is, are missionaries assigned for a given period of time, so they know when they're going to be coming back?
So it changes all the time, but the way that it worked for me back in the day, when my family was a missionary family, is about the same that it is today, where you are called for basically a 3-year tour of duty. You then get 3 months after that 3-year tour of duty called furlough. One of the things that you try to figure out during that time is if it's time for you to exit. During that time, you're also doing a lot of fundraising, but that's kind of the rhythm.
That furlough period also fits in with the U.S. law about having to come back to the U.S.
Probably, yeah.
For a certain length of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a great time to see grandparents.
Well, there's a long, even for State Department and military people, if you've been overseas, you can only stay for so many years without coming back to the U.S. for at least a period of time.
I saw Scott's hand first, but then I've got...
Right. On this fasting issue that we were talking about before.
Fasting, right.
All right, so I work mostly on church people who are, a lot of them are just pre-experts in Christianity, which is amazing to me. But,
uh-huh.
So one of the things I'm told, making sure that the reason Catholics don't eat meat on Friday, but they fish, so fish is not meat, because the fishmongers in Rome went to the Pope and said, hey, you know, help us get the business on Friday, and that's well established historical fact according to them. Anyway, so have you heard that?
I have heard different things. I'm always a little bit curious about there were a lot of bad popes. and a lot of popes that would take bribes from people like fishmongers. I think most of the time there is a little bit of both and of, hey, that actually makes sense. And yeah, okay, so maybe this helps out the fishmongers, but it also makes sense in terms of what we believe. So then the Catholic Church would promote that kind of cultural thing. There's a story about that being the case for Catholics communing only in one kind, that there was a drought in Italy, and wine was really expensive. And so they said, only the priest gets the wine. I'm not sure the historicity of that, but I've heard those things. I can't say necessarily that I believe them completely. And it really comes down to, especially as a Lutheran, what are you doing while you're fasting? Fasting is a biblical practice. We know that. Even fasting from specific things. So then it just comes down to the person who's doing the fasting and saying, all right, what's your motivation here? Is it just, to be a part of the crowd? In which case, there's maybe a couple of ways in which that's good, but most of it's bad. You should probably have those ideas on your own. Yeah. All right. Other questions? Bob.
Yeah, I was just wondering, wasn't a question, just a comment. I grew up in a northern village in northern Canada where there was a very strong Catholic presence. We had a presence, we had a bishop in town. Anyways, he told all the Catholics there, you don't have to eat fish on Catholic, you can eat meat if you want, because the lifestyle here is far more difficult than it is down in the south. You know, you have to chop wood if you want your house to be warm. You have to go cut trees in the forest and drag them back to your house if you want to have trees to chop. Anyways, it was a frontier kind of a lifestyle. And so he said, you can eat meat, provided you don't have to eat fish, because fish don't provide the protein.
The caloric intake, sure.
So.
Yeah. That's called a special dispensation of grace that your bishop gave. Yeah. Henry, and then I'll get to Elsa.
Why does LCMS use the term president for those positions that other denominations would call bishop? Because president is a secular term.
Uh-huh.
Bishop is, strictly religious.
Right. Because we had a bishop, and we kicked him out and sent him across the river.
Oh, that guy, bishop?
Yeah, Martin Steffen. So when the folks that became the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, when they came over from Saxony, they had a guy who was their bishop, a guy named Martin Steffen. Martin Steffen was accused, at least, of mishandling funds. And, what is it? There's some nice euphemistic term for it. But basically, doing things with young women that he shouldn't have been doing. So they were like, you need to leave. And so they brought him up on charges, and they booted him over the river. This is historically, They gave him certain items, and they put him in a rowboat, and they sent him across the river, and said, "Don't ever come back." So that's what happened to our bishop.
So we've never gotten over
that. Pretty much. it caused a huge conundrum, because if you think about it, in terms of how you understand a bishop, only a bishop can make another bishop. So when you kick your bishop out over the river, you got nobody else to make your next guy. And so C.F.W. Walther, who was a junior pastor in Stefan's kind of organization, then really became kind of the leader of the organization, worked these things out theologically, and said, we don't need a bishop. In fact, maybe having a bishop is even a bad idea, because there's so much abuse of power that can happen with that. And so instead of having a bishop, we're going to have a president.
I'm not thinking about different powers. It's just the term. Instead of calling, I forget our district president, but it's
Greg. So here's the weird exception. Both the English district and the SELC, which was the former Slovak Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is now one of our districts, both of them have bishops. Because they come from sort of outside of our framework. So we do have two bishops.
Well, I can see that. They may have chosen that word intentionally. Bishop carries with it a certain, like you say, church hierarchy thing.
And yeah.
Saying president, that implies the church body as a whole.
It does. And I think that's a big reason that we continue to use the terminology of president, is that it does. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has always been very sort of democratic, states' rights, kind of, self-governing. That's a big part of who we are. And so to throw a bishop into that, legitimately, I can only imagine the kind of backlash that would happen if Matt Harrison, our Synod president, started calling himself the Archbishop. You know, sniper rifles would come out. We do have this ethos of being very, you know, states' rights, district rights, very congregational autonomy, and the term bishop seems to rub the wrong way against that.
And I'll add anything that smacks back to the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes. I mean, for a long time, like, you know, I do the sign of the cross over myself. For a long time in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I probably would have been defrocked the first time I did that. You know, somebody in a Lutheran church would go, "What did you just do?" And I would have to say, "I was trying to get rid of a fly." So yeah, anything that smacks of Roman Catholicism for a long time in our denomination is a no-no. Yeah. Elsa. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that just that he was a missionary for life, and yeah. I think early on that was much more the, you know, again, this technology thing. You know, especially our early missionaries, it was kind of like a see you later. We might bring your body back. Yeah. Right, we might not even do that, right? Yeah. We have time for one long question or two short ones. So anybody else? Yeah.
What is the history of what we currently call Sunday school or adult education? Or, you know, how long has that been going on? Has that always been going on? When did it start?
That's another good stumper. I don't know. I know that it is an American invention. That Sunday school is not a European thing. I would imagine, and I'll have to check up on this, that Sunday school probably came about somewhere around the Second Great Awakening, so right after the Civil War, where you have a big emphasis on teaching the faith. You know, you had a big emphasis on revivals, but you also had an emphasis in local churches of teaching the faith in those ways. So
it has spread to some German churches, I know.
Oh, sure, right, yeah, yeah. Our for good or for bad, our United States culture is fairly viral across the. Across the world. Yeah. All right. One last question with Mary.
This was just about Sunday schools. When we moved to Perry County, Larry was a teacher in elementary schools there. In the early 50s, that congregation really was against Sunday school. They thought it was something you shouldn't have. But Santon, heard them criticize congregations.
Oh, those liberals in St. Louis. Yeah. Right. Them in their Sunday school.
I guess it was just such a time you needed lay people to teach Sunday school and
yeah.
Couldn't be depended on.
Yeah. That's it. So that was 1950s in Perry County, Missouri. So my little joke is that, you know, our hot button issues in the LCMS are probably about 20 years removed from that hot button issues and out in other vanguard denominations. Like, we're fighting about stuff that people have, you know, made their peace with for 20 years now.
It's not a question. I just wondered, speaking of missionaries, I'm sure you've seen this, Robert De Niro and the Mission. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have, but it's been a long time.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't end well. And he said, do you bring the bodies back?
Oh, right, right, yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's what I thought. So I would imagine then, with that timeline, Perry County is going to be a little bit more stuck in the mud. So it's probably about 1900 that Sunday school starts showing up. That's going to be my guess, given what you just said. We have to vote, so we are going to do that.